It's the oldest capital in the Americas and the largest city in North America. And it's not that far away. Mexico City has long been a cultural beacon for the rest of Latin America. But for many from the United States, we've avoided it in favor of the sunny seaside resorts that line the shores of Mexico. What does the big city offer to encourage us to try it out instead of spending more time at the beach? For a look at what we can discover in Mexico City today, we're joined by a New Yorker who moved there more than 30 years ago. David Lita joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves for a closer look at the neighborhoods and attractions of the Mexico City that he's proud to call home. David, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me, Rick.
So, David, set the scene. Mexico City is huge. It's a cultural center. It's, 7,000 feet high? One of the most striking things I can remember in all my travels is flying into Mexico City at night and seeing the lights of the city just blanket the landscape for as far as you can see.
It is one of the biggest cities in the Western Hemisphere. You know, there are other cities that have greater population density, but Greater Mexico City, which includes parts of Mexico State, has more than 20 million people.
More than 20 million people. I mean, obviously, that's twice as many people as in a lot of major countries. And, you know,
Right. We're
from the English-speaking Western Hemisphere, but it's important to think of Mexico City in the perspective of Spanish-speaking Western Hemisphere. It's like slam dunk, the cultural capital for people in Latin America.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. At this point, I've had the luck to be able to travel to a lot of cities in South America, and I'm not taking anything away from them, but none of them has made me feel like I made a mistake by moving to Mexico City. I love Rio. I love Sao Paulo. I really like Bogota, Buenos Aires, but none of them is as culturally diverse and as fascinating to me as Mexico City.
And Mexico City is quite a progressive city compared to a lot of American standards.
You know, when you say progressive, like between 2006 and 2012, we had a mayor that really was, by my lights, progressive. He legalized first-term abortion, which was almost unheard of in Latin America, made gay marriage legal, and did a lot of work to make transportation a little more fluid than it usually is, like bike lanes and shared bike programs, the expansion of what's called the Metrobus, which is an alternative form of mass transit. I really like what he did for the city.
You know, I always am fascinated by how a big country looks at its dominant city. You know, that famous New Yorker map, and you got the New York perspective of people in the provinces, you know, and Paris is, of course, the same way. How do people view Mexico City from the rest of Mexico? And how does Mexico City view the rest of the country?
Well, it's actually very similar, Rick, to the way, you know, the relationship between Paris and France or New York and the United States. People who live in the provinces are very wary and skeptical of people from Mexico City. We have a bad reputation in the rest of the country. And, you know, after living in Mexico City, almost anywhere else in the world seems small. Even Guadalajara, which has 6 million people, or Monterrey, which has about 5 million people, compared to Mexico City, they seem like small cities. And I think living in a city that big changes your perspective.
Mm. You know, when I think about going to a megapolis in Latin America, I got to say I've got concerns about my safety from, you know, getting mugged or pickpocketed, or my health concerns and so on. Give us a quick rundown on concerns that an American might have to be safe in Mexico City and to stay healthy.
Well, back in the 90s, you know, I'm going back almost 20 years, there was a crime problem. It was significant, but things have really been cleaned up now. If you look at statistics, worldwide statistics, you're a lot more likely to be the victim of a crime per capita in many cities in the United States than you are in Mexico City. You know, if you're in New Orleans or Baltimore or Philadelphia or St. Louis or, you know, Washington, D.C., you're much more likely to be robbed, carjacked, murdered. Mexico City is actually, considering how big it is, it's actually a very safe place. And the other thing that I think is really important to point out, Rick, if you're a tourist, most of the places that you want to see, I mean, none of them are high crime areas. There are like parts of the city that I wouldn't encourage people to go to, like I guess any big city in the world, but a tourist wouldn't have much reason for going to those at all.
Right. So if I had a great meal with you a few years ago when I was in Mexico City, and if I was going to visit you now and, you know, crash at your place and spend a couple of days out and about just exploring, what advice would you give me just to watch out for, just to be a little street savvy?
Well, first of all, the neighborhood that I live in and the neighborhood where we had our meal, Rick, you don't even have to take precautions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very safe area. But I would say, like in any big city and even some small cities, you just sort of be aware of your surroundings.
Right.
Just watch where you're going. And, you know, I take tourists around the city. They're pulling out their phones and taking pictures. I've never felt like, uh-oh, this is a dangerous situation. I just don't think it's such an issue.
My son has lived in Colombia, and he doesn't take his phone out in most of the city. So it's just...
Is that right?
There's certain things you don't show off when you're on the streets. But where you go, where the tourists go in Mexico City, I guess that's not a concern. So that's good
news.
Yeah,
I'm knocking wood or knocking my head, which is what Mexicans do when we can't find a piece of wood. I've never had a problem of any kind like that with any tour I've done. I think it's a very safe place.
David Lita is our guide to Mexico City, which he's called home now for more than 30 years. His website has information on his themed neighborhood tours in Mexico City and on the books he's written in both English and Spanish. They provide insights into Mexican culture and how it sometimes clashes with the United States. It's at davidlita.com, spelled L-I-D-A. David, a lot of people say Mexico City has a sort of a European vibe compared to small towns in the countryside. But when I go to Mexico City, it's pretty clear to me, we Americans kind of go to the la-la land of the city, you know, the Zona Rosa and the historical center where there's nice restaurants and so on. But you also got to remember, 9 million people in Mexico City proper, 20 million plus in the metro area. The real essence of Mexico is this vast population. Give us a sense of how we can really understand what is inherently Mexican about Mexico City and what is this human foundation that the city sits on?
Well, that's a great question, Rick. There's no like easy way to answer that, but I would tell you, for example, when I take people around, I really try to give them some context, especially in the Centro Histórico, which is the oldest part of the city. There are some streets where you're almost overwhelmed by the amount of people selling stuff on the street. More than half of the working population of Mexico City makes its living from the informal economy. People who sell things on the street, valet parking attendants, people who work who clean houses, none of them are on an official payroll. They're just getting by best as they can.
Let's just think about that for a moment. You said half of the people in Mexico City earn their living in the informal economy.
Half the working population.
It's amazing. I understand 1% of Mexico controls 40% of its wealth. So they've got a gap between rich and poor that's even more obscene than here in the United States. But the place we are inclined to ignore as tourists is that reality of the informal economy and the half of the people that are trying to live on $5 of wages a day. I mean, we used to have dime stores. In Mexico City, now you've got stalls out in the streets that are actually nickel stores.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, it is kind of amazing that way that you do have those enormous contrasts. Some of the people who hire me to take them around, like they're staying in the most expensive hotels in the city, but they want me to take them to eat tacos on the street, which cost, you know, between 50 cents and a dollar a piece. And that's some of the best food in Mexico. You know, it's very much...
There's a parallel world. There's a parallel world. I was someplace recently, it was Cuba, and there's two different currencies. And the tourist has one currency and the local people have the other currency. And the average tourist doesn't even know there's two different currencies. It's totally parallel economies. And I think you mentioned there's a couple hundred Starbucks in town, and there's 5 million people that never in their life would buy a Starbucks.
Exactly.
You wrote an article, David, called Improvising Survival. It was the most fascinating thing. and you took us to a flea market in a very poor district and talked about that scene. Take us into that market right now. You're so good at writing and you're a great tour guide. What would that like to go to that flea market, to browse around?
Well, I'm going to ask your listeners to please imagine stores like TJ Maxx or Marshall's or those stores that sell clothing from last year or maybe the year before, a couple of seasons ago, that is at a discount. A year later, 2 years later, the clothes that haven't sold, they get sold in bulk, probably by weight, to Mexico. And these markets, they're set up at a different neighborhood every day, mostly in poor parts of town. And people buy these clothes for, you know, pennies might be an exaggeration, but we're not going much farther than that. They're stalls that are set up on the street underneath like pink tarpaulin shelters. And the clothes are literally piled. There's just these enormous piles that you have to pick through.
Our school buses that are retired end up down south of the border, and even our clothes that don't sell end up south of the border. And I've been to places in the developing world where they really are sold by the weight, and people just gather up a bunch of old socks and T-shirts, and they're walking around with T-shirts, you know, that mean something to somebody in Minnesota or New York, and they're just wearing this T-shirt because it cost them 50 cents. That's kind of the reality on this planet.
But, you know, like, Rick, in that article, when I described the market, I talked to a woman who works as a nurse, but, you know, unfortunately, nurses make very little money in Mexico. But she told me that she'd been going to that market for more than 20 years and her clothed her entire family because she could find stuff for a dollar or two or, you know, maybe $5.
Oh, I'm sure that's a blessing. And that market's a blessing to people who are in a normal economy. Former New Yorker David Lita fell in love with Mexico City when he first arrived and has made it his home ever since. He's updating us on what makes the Mexican capital unique and what's new there after over 2 years of weathering the pandemic. We have links to his earlier appearances with us with this week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. David, you wrote that it occurs to me that all of us who write about cities, consciously or not, are playing against time, frantically trying to document something before it vanishes. You've been writing about Mexico City now for several decades. Mexico City is changing, and a lot of the charm and the character is being pushed out by modern realities. How would you assess the change in the character of the real Mexico that you know and love in the last 20 years?
Well, you know, Mexico City is becoming a much more international place than it was when I got there. This is a very bourgeois pleasure, Rick, but I can find a bagel in Mexico City almost as good as in New York. I can find a croissant as good as I've eaten in Paris. And so that's a really nice thing. Now,
you even wrote that when you first came to Mexico City, there really was no coffee. You'd get hot water and Nescafe or even a Coca-Cola for breakfast, but they didn't really have coffee. And now we've got this, this trendy scene.
Literally, when I got to Mexico City, you could count on the fingers of one hand places that would sell you a good cup of coffee. After Starbucks came in, when the Mexicans realized how much they were charging for a cup of coffee, a lot of enterprising Mexicans opened up cafes. So now there's like stiff competition for Starbucks with very, very good Mexican coffee.
So we're talking about how Mexico is changing with David Lita. I was kind of saddened, David, to read in your article about how the corner grocery store, which used to be, you know, just kind of a place where people go for their fruits and vegetables and so on, are being replaced by chain convenience stores where there's almost nothing of nutritional value. And it almost makes me think that the poor neighborhoods are becoming good food deserts.
Well, that's not precisely true, Rick, because even in the poorest neighborhoods, they have what's called a tianguis. These are markets on wheels that come to your neighborhood once a week, and they sell really good fruits and vegetables, eggs, meat, fish, chicken. But those particular convenience stores are, to me, a scourge. I mean, they're just selling 15 different sizes of bags of potato chips, all the different kinds of Coca-Cola. And in those stores, you're absolutely right. You cannot get anything of nutritional value. And diabetes is becoming endemic in Mexico, there's a lot of consequences to those kind of changes. It's not like the other food is not available, but it's cheaper to buy a Coca-Cola than a bottle of water in Mexico City.
That's, you know, it's an observation I have in the United States as well. If you go to, you know, less affluent corners of our country, you step into a convenience store and you look what's on the racks and it's all processed food and there's nothing right. but sugary drinks and it's just all, you know, soda pop. And you just kind of think, wow, it's hard to get any good nutrition here if you don't know where to go. On the other hand, thank goodness they've got the markets on wheels. I was mentioning my son in Colombia, like anywhere in Latin America, if you wake up in the morning, you'll hear the happy sounds of the man who's got a fruit cart going, papaya, papaya. And yeah. he loves to talk yeah. about that. Papaya, papaya. You get these beautiful opportunities to connect with fresh produce that way. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with David Lida. David's website is davidlida.com. And David, we're out of time, but for me, it's so great to have you on and to remind people that we can connect with the soul of Mexico City. Of course, we're going to see the famous sites, but we got to get in there and connect with the people. And in Mexico City, it's the working class, the poor people, that is where you feel the soul of Mexico City. Give us one encounter with one person that you've had that you've enjoyed writing about that might inspire us to get out there and really connect.
Well, I remember not that long ago, you know, there are these guys that wandered through the streets with a little shoeshine kit. One of them walked by a place where I was having a coffee and I thought, you know, my shoes needed a shine. So I asked him if he would do mine. And he just said, you know, not only did a great job shining the shoes, he gave me like words, inspiring words, you know, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he tried to leave me with some kind of inspirational message. And I just thought, this is an encounter with a human being. And he left me, you know, feeling extremely lucky.
I remember you wrote about that. It was like you got spiritual inspiration from the man who shined your shoes. And you realized this is more than just giving a guy in the informal economy a little gig. You were connecting.
You know, it's much more, those sort of encounters are much more human than the United States, I would say.
Oh, this is, you know, it's always so good to talk to you, David, and to remind our listeners that Mexico City is offering a big welcome. David Lida, thanks for joining us, and I'll look forward to seeing you next time I'm in Mexico City.
I'll be waiting for you, Rick. Thank you so much for inviting me again, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Ni yerba de ayer secándose al sol, cuando rajes los tamangos buscando ese mango que te haga morfar, la indiferencia del mundo que es sordo y es mudo recién sentirá.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakeling. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Thanks to our colleagues at Feature Story News in New York for their help this week. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.